there are people like, oops, I don't have time because I'm too busy having boobily, so I don't have time to do my dharma practice and my sadhana. They're not people like that. They're not people who take dharma like a buffet, as and when they like, but it's a spiritual practice. And these people have power. These people, where they live, what they wear, what they touch, what they visualize has a lot of power. Why? From years and years and years of contacting the Buddhas. And some of these beings have become one with the Buddhas. One meaning what? In their visualization, they see the lights come and then the Buddhas is in their mind talking to them.
What's your name? My name is Tara. What's your name? My name is Tara too. How are you?
No. Now there are people who visualize lights and the Buddhas enter and then the Buddhas talk to them. You know? Hi. And they email me, they write and they tell the people, guess what the Buddha said today? What? Fly kite. Oh, you tell the Buddha fly kite. No, the Buddha told me fly kite. No, the Buddha told me to tell you fly kite. Thank you. No, no, we're not talking about these lights of the Buddha. Spiritual ventriloquism. The Dalai Lama doesn't run around the world telling people, I talk to Avalokiteshvara and Kuan Yin every day. He probably does. I'm sure there are people out there who can see deities and see things. And, oh, man, I believe it. I'm not saying you have to be spiritually attained to see it. There are people who merits go down to see a hantu. You don't run and say, hey, I'm a Dalai Lama. Chinese believe your merits down, you see hantu. So if you see hantu every day, what do you think? Collect merits. That's right. Collect merits. And then the hantus actually enter your dreams and talk to you. How are you? A, get help. B, don't advertise because they're going to tell you to get help. C, you're going to see yourself losing friends. I don't see anything. I don't dream anything. I don't hear anything. People tell me this, I do divination, okay, whatever. Because I'm not interested in that. I'm not denying it exists. I'm not denying people can do it. I'm saying that, what's the point? You do it, you don't do it, you have to check what's the result of seeing or talking to deities. How is your mind changing? And if your mind changes, is it for the moment because you're on a high? Because your auntie dropped dead, you got an inheritance? So they're like, oh, congratulations, thank you. What is it really, you think? And the next day you go back to yourself, I'm bored, I'm depressed, I hate my husband, I hate my kids, oh God. You know, then you're not talking to deities because your mood swings. And if that's the result of talking to deities, maybe you ought to stop talking to your friends. I'm not saying they don't exist, they do exist, but be careful. Be careful, don't open the doors for them. Once you open the doors are wide open, all kinds of weirdos come in, all times. Let me tell you. That's right. So, what happens is, these people, in their meditations, they generate compassion. They're using their corporeal body, made up of the four elements, earth, air, water, and fire. They're using these elements. But it's not these elements. It's not these elements that make the items holy. It is what these elements contain. They contain the mind. The mind that has developed to that level. And therefore, that mind can affect that body. Therefore, that body can affect the environment around them. And therefore makes it holy. So therefore, a living holy Buddha has existed in this world. And whether people accept him or not, everybody calls him Buddha. And there's a place where he was born, where he became enlightened, where he gave the first Dharma talk, and where he passed into parinirvana. Those four places are considered very, very holy. Why? They were where the Buddha manifested. Why are they holy? They're holy because when we realize their significance and by the power of the object itself, a Buddha, when we go there, how do these holy items affect us? Now let me tell you. They affect us because we in our mind have many types of karmas stored away. Many types of imprints and dispositions from this life and previous lives stored away in our mind. And we need an environmental condition to open them up. So therefore, let's say in one of our previous lives, we made charity to the monks. Maybe we were a very good pastor and we really helped people. Or maybe we really, really, really served the nuns. Or maybe we built temples. Or maybe we did practice ourselves. Maybe we held some vows. Maybe we're amongst the nuns. Or maybe in our previous life, we were great charitable people who did charity. Maybe in our previous life, we practiced ahimsa. Maybe we were a Jain in our previous life. We didn't harm anyone. And so those actions that we've done are gone, but results is in our mind. It's dormant. So those results, those results are called karmic dispositions, or simply dispositions, Bachak in Tibetan. So those dispositions are in our mind, active, and they're not from one lifetime. They're from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes. How strong we have done in every single life is how strong those difference will be. Example, if every single life you did meditation for the last 10, 15, 20 lives, then in this life, meditation and the strive for Dharma and compassion and those qualities will be very strong in you. Why? Because the disposition is there. So therefore, when you come across a Lama, when you come across a teacher, when you cross the Dharma text, when you come across something holy, like where Buddha was born, it activates that disposition. When that disposition is activated, and then you realize there's more in life than just what I'm doing, and I want to develop higher qualities, that's a blessing. Be clear. That is a blessing. That is what a blessing is. A blessing is when something opens your disposition and influences you to the positive way. That is a blessing. Therefore, all people of all religions go and get a blessing. I lived in India for many years and I love it. I didn't want to leave, but I had to teach. And every Indian will go to any temple or mosque or whatever. They're very, very, very communal. And they will go to temple immediately, they touch the door and go like this and bring it to them. Some will bring it like this, like this, like this. Meaning, touching that holy place and bringing it to their heart, bringing it to their mind, blessing their body. All Indians will do that in India. They go to whatever religion they are, where even Muslims and Sikhs and Jains all come to Gandhi Monastery, because Gandhi Monastery is a big tourist place in South India. They all come and they're so beautiful because they all come to Gandhi Monastery. At the doorway, they go like this. Goodness is one. And that I learned that from there. Beautiful. So my point is what? It's the same thing. Is these dispositions are planted in us. That's what the Buddha says. We have the Buddha potential. We have the Buddha in us. Buddha in us doesn't mean a Buddha. It means the potential to be a Buddha. So therefore, since we have this potential, we need to open it up. How much we practice and how quick we get the result is dependent on effort and also how much imprints we have in previous lives. That is also not to say that if my previous life was in a monk, we should feel disappointed or a nun. No, in this life we can plant more seeds, more dispositions also. So when we go to a holy place, like Wat Gaya, or we meet a holy lama like His Holiness Trigyen Rinpoche, or we go to a holy center and we see holy statues that's been consecrated, or we have holy malas, or we touch some holy items, those holy items, when we see, touch, fear, feel, or perceive, and then we show respect, will be a catalyst for these imprints, for these positions to open. And therefore, holy items are very treasured in the Buddhist world.